At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. It is our happy hour brought to you by the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. Whether you're thinking about Mother's Day, Memorial Day, or our next live show, June 20th, make sure you check out GrandHotelCapeMay.com. It's never too early to make those summer plans, GrandHotelCapeMay.com. And I'm told that our guest may join us at one of those live shows. He is the author of the book, Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me. He is the one and only Dr. Wilfred Riley. What's up, my man? Can you put him up for me, Sean?
We're still waiting for him. He'll be on in like two seconds.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
Make sure that would be a good thing to communicate with me, you know, before I get into the introduction of him.
Yes, I told you 5:05.
Oh, well, yeah. It's 5:04:50. So
well, you got 10 seconds to vamp, I guess. He should be joining us any second. Everyone knows he's a professor and the semester is ending. So I think he got held up in a meeting, but he should be joining us legitimately any second.
All right. Well, get me somebody while I'm waiting. Get me anybody. Get me somebody.
Anybody in particular?
Get me somebody while I'm waiting for somebody.
Should I get maybe President Trump will be available. I'll let you get that extra 10 seconds that you claimed I shortchanged you of.
Oh, we did get I am going to go to a White House press briefing, so that's cool. We got that, which is nice.
Yeah.
So that should be
awesome.
I'm excited about that. That'll be fun.
Riley is there, by the way.
Oh, he is. All right, great. So after that amazing, amazing introduction, let me try it again. Here we go. He is the author of the book, Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me. He is Dr. Wilfred Riley. Hello, my man. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to have you back on the show. There's a lot to talk about. Have you followed the Dave Portnoy bar situation in Philly at all?
Yeah, actually, I have. I mean, it's been pretty viral on Twitter and Facebook. I have some friends that are in that kind of bar stool, like sports gambling community, getting a little old for it, in my opinion. But I've followed that situation.
Now, have you ever talked to Portnoy yourself? Have you ever had him on, or you guys ever communicate?
No, we myself and Charles, my business partner, tried to get him on the Cut the Bull podcast once. It didn't work out. They're just conflicting schedules. No problem with the guy. But no, I've never met Dave.
So I want to play a clip for you. This is him rescinding his offer to the Temple student, who originally he said, you know, he wasn't going to out the guy. He was going to take him to see Auschwitz and teach him about the Holocaust. Then this guy went on a podcast where the guy called Portnoy a filthy Jew. That's what he said about Dave Portnoy. You know, terrible stuff. This is Dave Portnoy rescinding. This is cut number 28, Sean. Let's cue this up here. Barstool Sports President Dave Portnoy, cut 28.
Originally planned to send the people involved to Auschwitz, I believe, to learn about the Holocaust. Now, you've since revoked the plan. What action are you taking against the culprits?
I mean, what action can you take? So originally, when I got to the bottom of it, got the names, numbers, I spoke to the two people I thought involved. They both basically were in tears apologizing. And I tried to use it as a teaching moment to be like, well, if we send them to Poland, to concentration camps, as well as some other activities, maybe they learn and see, you know, the consequences of their actions, their words. Since then, one of the guys who got suspended, Mo Khan, I spoke with him, and he did a 180. He went from accepting all the responsibility to basically he put out his own little press release saying he was just a citizen journalist. Total lie, total crap, total everything that I hate when people don't take accountability. So this kid, Mo Khan, he got suspended from Temple. And, you know, anytime he goes for a job, someone's going to probably Google his name and see that he did this. And that hopefully will be punishment enough. He's shown no interest in making up for what he did. And he seems to think he's a victim.
Your take, Dr. Riley, on all this. And would you handle it the way that Portnoy's handling it?
Well, first of all, one thing I will say as a guy who teaches in college in a diverse environment, I don't know if you're going to find this specific guy if you Google Mo Khan. I mean, that's kind of like the Hindi or whatever equivalent of John Smith. I mean, it means literally something like Mr. Upper Middle Class. That's what Mo and Khan mean. So, you know, the kid, he'll be hunted, and I think he'll escape. What do I think about this kind of stupid situation? If I ran a nightclub, which I actually did at one point, and one of the waiters held up a sign that said, screw the blacks or, you know, the rival sports team or something, and it was considered offensive, I'd probably just fire him.
Yeah.
I wouldn't make an attempt to pursue him through his life. I'm not paying $10,000 to send some random local rival to Auschwitz. I mean, I think it would just be like, well, you can't work at this bar anymore because you had a verbal and almost physical altercation with the owner. That would be it. So I think that there's an intentional choice by Mr. Portnoy to make this to some extent into a national story. And I think when that happened, the other guy probably feels a little humiliated. He does something stupid and responds. And people are still talking about this a week later. I feel it was offensive. But remember, this is a guy who responded to a foreign war, held up a sign in a bar. He worked part time in the bar. You know, I think right now they're in a good place. The two guys can both go do different things. Mo Khan can go apply for a job. I mean, that's it. I don't think a lot of this stuff, if everyone were the same race in most of these fight stories, Shiloh Hendricks, even the terrible Carmelo Anthony story, I don't think we would ever see them in the press. I think that's one thing I take from that.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, a lot of this stuff, because we do live in an age of outrage, obviously, it becomes viral very quickly. I think Portnoy did what I would have done, which is to immediately address it, come out and trash this, because what you don't want to do is you don't want to be accused of allowing anti-Semitism or racism. Like, I remember years and years and years ago listening to Rush Limbaugh talk about how he was at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and Bill Clinton was there, and he made a joke that Rush was a racist. And Rush Limbaugh demanded an apology from Bill Clinton because he said, you cannot let stuff like that stick. And I think there's a lot of merit to that, because there are people out there who just want to do that. They want to label you a racist, a sexist, a homophobe, a transphobe, you know, and certain ones, who gives a damn, right? You call me transphobic, it's like, that's stupid, I'm not, but okay. But racist, at least, maybe it's not as bad as it used to be, I don't know, but that'd be the kind of thing where if you were labeled that, like, you're done, you know? So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I do think the one thing about that, though, is Dave, who's half Jewish, wasn't really being labeled anything. It was just it made his bar look bad.
Yeah.
I mean, what I would have done is, like I said, fire the guy who, like, ran the bar backs or something, and then maybe issue one of those unread press releases like, you know, Dave Portnoy's chain of bars and pizza shops strongly condemns racism without going into detail. And then that's it. It's a wrap. I do think that, and I've actually given some fairly public figures, like Cut the Bull guests and so on, advice on this. When it comes to PR, if there's something idiotic that happens, fist fight, domestic argument, drinking too much, something like that, you have the option of not discussing that in your public presence at all, unless it has kind of matriculated into the public square. So I first heard about this when Dave Portnoy did a video on it that got 5 million hits.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, so I like Dave Portnoy, but the question is there anything there at all? Like, if someone stands up with a sign that says Bleep Palestine, I'm an Israel guy myself, you know, you have the option, I guess this is the last line, you have the option of taking him aside and saying, don't do that in this bar again unless you want to lose your job, and that's it.
Right.
And there's no story. Like, the Shiloh Hendricks thing, a kid was probably trying to steal something, she uses a bad word, I agree, it's a very bad word, she argues with another guy. If it hadn't been for either the guy or both of them filming this on their phones, there's just no story there. Like, we don't have worse race relations than we did in 1964. We all just have computers and cameras in our pockets.
That's a good point. Dr. Wilfred Riley's with me right now. It's great to have him on the show. Author of the book Lies, My Liberal Teacher Told Me. By the way, you know, Trump said he's bringing back Columbus Day. We talked about this before. Why we have Columbus Day, which of course is the attempt of the president at the time to say we got to find a way for Italian Americans to be acclimated into society, because the largest mass lynching in American history was of Italian Americans. But somebody brought up a good point. Like, it hasn't really gone away necessarily. It's still a federal holiday. So is it more of just making the point of, like, listen, we in this house, it's like Tony Soprano, like, in this house, it's Columbus Day. You know what I mean?
Kind of. He's an Italian American man. Yeah. You know, I think there are a lot of ways to look at this. Like, I would say you almost have Columbus Day America and then Indigenous Peoples Day America. I mean, you know, down here in Kentucky, even in major cities like Louisville, which has a sizable Italian community, certainly Cincinnati, a lot of Italians and Germans, there's a big, nice parade every Columbus Day. So, I mean, I don't think, and it's sort of one of those things where everyone, normal people acknowledge that our ancestors used to fight each other. So, like, the local Indian tribe, the Choctaw, marches in the Columbus Day Parade. They usually have one of the best floats. They have a little casino. I mean, so there's an element of humor, just like, we're not at war anymore, right? Like, you can be an Indian wearing a Christopher Columbus tri-cornered hat now. You know, even in Chicago, where, you know,
am I allowed to like the Japanese again?
You can, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, you can be into anime as an Italian guy. I mean, that's kind of the modern. I really do think that was a point. This is such a cliche on the center right, but by the 80s and 90s, we'd gotten to a point where black kids cheered for Bird and white kids cheered for Jordan. There's actually a lot of truth to that. So, you know, I think that going into kind of enemy territory, into Berkeley or something, with the Columbus Day proclamation from Trump is the kind of good symbolic thing Trump does. I don't think most Americans had ever moved away from Columbus Day any more than we've moved away from Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. There are people that teach about how America was founded as this awful place, but they don't go to the next part where they talk about how America's gotten better. They use that to push the narrative that America's an awful place still, and we have to reject America because of that. I think that's where it becomes problematic, right? It's one thing to acknowledge the sins of the past. It's another thing to say those sins have not gone away, and so we got to throw the whole thing out and start over.
Yeah, I think that when you teach history, there are three levels to it. One is there was a horrible primitive past. I mean, marital rape wasn't made illegal until the late 1980s. Our ancestors literally used to kill each other. So that's point one. But also point two is that's because the rules were different at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't have OnlyFans or factory farming or nuclear weapons or most of our vices. You know, the things you could criticize men or whites for, you could also criticize certainly blacks, Asians, in many cases women, for. Child abuse wasn't taken seriously as a crime until roughly the same year I gave earlier. So point one is, like, yeah, sure, bad stuff happened in the past. Point two is, under a different set of rules that also were quite honorable in their way, like the code of chivalry. And point three is, we've moved past that now. So, like, the Civil Rights Act was passed in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
That's 61 years ago. So the idea that three generations, the idea that nothing has changed in the United States or there's been no progress toward racial peace or something, we're, I believe, the third least racist country in the world. So just the endless flagellation, you know, Christopher Columbus and the great native chiefs fought each other. Yes, in 1495, because that's what one did in 1495. I mean, like, every upper middle class man in both Spanish and Aztec society was a knight. It means what you think it does. You know, that's a little different from where we are now.
Yeah, just a little bit. So Vanity Fair had this article. By the way, did you enjoy the Met Gala? Did you pay any attention to the Met Gala?
I have a conscious policy of not paying attention to that.
Thank
Sometimes
you.
If a female friend wants to, I watch the Oscars. But like any of that other stuff, the Golden Globes, the Emmys, whatever they do for theater, the Tonys, like I fashion balls, I pay absolutely no attention to it. It always has sort of a Hunger Games feel to me. Where, like, when I see the pictures from the next day, it's like someone wearing a whole jaguar skin over their head, walking with, like, an African-American midget who's dressed all in gold and all this kind of stuff. And I just, like, you know, I don't live in the capital. I live in, like, district whatever Kentucky was. Like, I have no real association with that.
By the way, you can't say that word, you know.
What, midget?
No, Kentucky.
Oh, okay, yeah, Kentucky, it's very offensive to union men or something. Yeah,
exactly.
Gotta watch that type of stuff.
Got to be careful with that.
Actually, can I tell one quick story there?
You tell any story you want.
We did a sensitivity training at, you know, a mid-sized, well-ranked state university that I'm not going to name recently. And people were talking about words that offended them. And they started off with the basic racial insults, with most people saying N-word and C-word. And we were all nodding like, yeah, let's get this over with. And then it just went on and on. Like some guy who was an older upper middle class man was like, I'm very offended by the word impotent. I think it's an insult to men of a certain age. And it just, people started dropping this kind of stuff. And you just became very aware that you couldn't talk if you were to take this seriously. So everyone just sat there for about 40 more minutes of it. Like woman of a certain age was described as offensive by one of them. And I think that's the category where like midget is supposed to be harmful. Like, the replacement for midget, by the way, as you know, is little person, which is way worse. He's a wee little fella.
Matt, can you pull up Jamal Bowman for me, please? Can you grab that audio? No, I'm sorry, not Jamal
Bowman.
Hank
Johnson, you mean.
Hank Johnson, yeah. Can you grab that?
Yeah, give me 2 seconds.
In the meantime, I want to play a clip for you of Bill Maher. It reminds me a little bit of what you just said about how like everybody's offended. So Bill Maher, this is Cut 27, Sean. He was talking about after his dinner with Trump. He actually felt freer speaking to Trump than Obama or Clinton, which is not that surprising, actually, because Trump seems like the kind of guy that like nothing's going to offend him. Obviously, he doesn't care. So Cut 27.
And I said that in the piece when I did it about, you know, liberals, again, they don't like the truth, but that's the truth. It's like, as far as like just feeling free to just speak exactly how I feel. Yes, I felt freer to do that with Trump than Obama or Clinton.
You think Trump
that's emblematic of the way the two parties have kind of switched.
Yeah, okay, so there's that. I mean, it's true, right? I mean, for a long time, the left has been the party of everybody has to be offended and you got to walk on eggshells and, you know, we're all sensitive snowflakes. I think he's spot on. Part of what I think the appeal for Trump is, particularly among guys, is that we don't have to live in that world. And people haven't started going out and burning crosses or any other nonsense that the left said was going to happen. They just feel like they can talk again. Like they can just have conversations again without having to worry about, I'm going to offend somebody because I said the wrong thing.
Yeah, I do think that the parties have switched back and forth on this. And I think, like, I would be in kind of that James Lindsay, Chris Rufo, intermediate, like, Republican with a tie on, but not necessarily going to church three times a week zone, where I would defend the general concept of free speech. But, yeah, I mean, historically, the cliche was, you know, the church lady or the local mayor, those people, those groups slant Republican, is going to say, hey, this is a neighborhood, don't talk that way. And there's some justification for that, but it's annoying. But I think that stereotype has now totally flipped, where like the church lady is the blue-haired, you know, sign-carrying campus activist who wants you, and it's not even like don't say profanity or use, you know, crude terms for female anatomy. It's like don't say midget. Like, right. it's a whole category of stuff you're not supposed to talk about. Yeah, I think that's true. And I think Trump kind of represents a shift in the Republican Party, because if you look at, like, Mitt Romney was a Mormon. I don't think he drinks milk. He definitely doesn't drink coffee, much less liquor. like, you know, John McCain, great guy, soldier. But I think he again, was a teetotaler, probably justifiably, after he got home from that war zone. But, I mean, those were the guys where, you know, like, the audience would get rowdy criticizing Obama. Like, he looks kind of Arabic to me. And, like, the candidate would stop the rally and say, hey, now, we don't talk like that. And, you know, I probably wouldn't do that if I were running for president. You know, like, Trump is the new zone of, like, okay, they called the guy that was doing that a Nazi. So I'm not a Nazi, but I'm going to come out and say whatever I want about women, about business, about war. He died like a dog. You know, Trump is totally the flip of that. So, yeah, I think you can say pretty much whatever you want around him. Oh, except 100%. Maybe like, hey, Donald Trump, you're an idiot and you're doing a terrible job as president. Like, if you work for him, that would probably be a short-lived relationship.
Yeah, I don't think it would do. You'd wind up like the Mooch, like Scaramucci, lasting 11 days or
something
like that.
Scaramucci did that. He was a trading floor guy from New York, and he just went in there and was yelling back and forth with everyone, and it was like 20 alpha personalities, and the other 19 were like, you got to get out of here.
Yeah, it's not that
complicated. Producing that great political term, one Scaramucci.
Well, we actually have a clip of Scaramucci from today. I don't, he's still out there. I don't know why, but he's still out there. But here's Hank Johnson, Congressman Hank Johnson, talking about the M word. This is still one of my favorite clips of all time, by the way. Take a listen.
The M word. Last night, I used an analogy that some find offensive. And I certainly was not meaning to be offensive or use a derogatory term. You know, everybody knows what the N-word is. I had never heard of the M-word, Representative Shankowski, the M-word. But to my discovery, just within the last 12 hours or so, I have found that the use of the M-word is no longer socially acceptable. Now, the M-word refers to a group of people, the little people.
It's just so bad. It's almost like parody, isn't it? Like, you think the guy's got to be pulling our legs here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is the reason it's become kind of hard to take the left seriously. Like, a lot of the stuff they say sounds like it comes directly out of a Saturday Night Live skit. Like, when people are using words that are rude, they're sort of barroom chatter, like retarded, gay might be in this zone. But midget, I think we can definitely say on the airwaves. And you have people that are sitting there literally as censors, you know, I mean, much of them watching C-SPAN, like Hank Johnson's on congressional television a lot, but not on other television. I mean, like, when you have people sitting there watching C-SPAN and critiquing what the candidates say and pulling out thesauruses to write them letters, I mean, yeah, that's funny. Like, that is a skit. That is the church lady skit, just with, like, dyed hair and a rejection of God.
I remember, it was. Do you remember Tipper Gore and the whole parental advisory in the 90s when they went through all that? I mean, that was the Democrats doing that. But prior to that, but you also had the religious right and Ralph Reed and those. There's still groups out there that protest shows and I mean, it's kind of both sides have this problem. It just seems that the Democrats do it, or the left, I should say, does it more in like everyday conversation versus targeting certain things like they used to do, like they target lyrics or something like that. Now it's like just two guys talking at a bar and somebody overhears the wrong thing and comes over and feels it's there. They got to make a point to let you know you've just said something offensive. It's like nobody's even talking to you. You know what I mean? Like, we're not talking to you.
I think that's an appropriate answer in public situations, by the way. Like, listening in on someone else's conversation or commenting on someone else's sex life is actually considerably ruder than, like, giving your blunt opinions about whatever. I mean, I think that leads into an important point, because, like, I'm not sympathetic to, like, corny people in ill-fitting polyester suits picketing Ozzy Osbourne, but when the people in the 1980s were chasing Twisted Sister and Two Live Crew around, both of those groups literally had songs with names like I'll Kill You. So yeah. I think that there is, it's still lame, but there is a standard where screaming profanity, having naked women on stage, biting the heads off animals, like most of that stuff would actually offend most people. The thing that's unique about the modern left is that it was a set of standards that came from college campuses that nobody actually believed, that everyone was kind of haranged into pretending to agree with. I mean, and that are now part of, like, trainings in every workplace. Like, I mean, the part of the training I referred to is the idea that any sexual encounter that doesn't, what is it, it's not provably, affirmatively, enthusiastically consented to is rape, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think any married person necessarily provably takes that all that seriously in real life, but it's a thing you hear. It's part of the zeitgeist. Everyone agrees you shouldn't bite the head off bats. I don't think most people agree with the, like, the M-word stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Biting the head off a bat could start a worldwide pandemic.
Rabies.
Yeah. Or rabies. That's true.
We just saw it happen. Yeah.
Now I'm hungry thinking about eating delicious bats. So let me bring up this story. Vanity Fair.
Okay.
Vanity Fair was trashed for claiming MAGA is to blame for America's protein obsession. Vanity Fair is making some bold claims about the popularity of protein, saying that it's become popular because of influential podcast bros, the MAGA movement, and an undeniably gendered interest from those who have more testosterone. First of all, when I was in high school, I was a chubby kid growing up, right? So my mother would bring me, back in the day, they had Jell-O pudding pies. I'm not talking about Jell-O pudding pops, Jell-O pudding pies. So you remember, like, they'd have it was like a shell, but instead of it being apple pie, it was pudding. I would eat that. I was a chubby kid. So in high school, I made it a point to try to get in shape and lose weight. There was a book at the time, and that there was this woman out there who would say you could eat like 64 potatoes or one slice of cheese. There was this movement for everybody to eat lots of carbs. And then Dr. Atkins kind of came around at some point and he was like, stop it. You got to eat protein. I never really thought about MAGA when I was trying to do low carb. I don't think any of these Hollywood celebrities who do low carb. I think we just kind of understand the fact now that if you eat a lot of carbs, a lot, on a daily basis, you're going to balloon up like a tick. So, you know, work on it. I mean, isn't that just, but the fact that they have to try to assign it to like bros out there being like, you know, I love that part. Because we've been talking about protein versus carbs. It's literally been a battle since I was a child.
Yeah, I do think there is something there, actually, though, right now in kind of the younger generations I watch, because the body positivity movement, like, it's beautiful to be fat,
yeah,
has really become like upper middle class, white and black, female coded. Like, no one else believes that. You don't see like Asian martial artists like trying to go grow beer guts and commenting that they would look beautiful in any size and so on. It's like one category or two categories. And I think that, like, the bro response to this, where guys are openly saying, like, look, I don't date unattractive women. Sorry. I mean, that was, Dan Bilzerian or somebody has a shirt that says that. And now he's the best role model for young men, but whatever. I mean, like, people are saying that, and you've got people like Joey Swole that are just, like, physical trainers, football coaches that are, you know, talking about how they eat, and it's like the classic steak and eggs kind of stuff. It's nothing too crazy. I do think that that's getting kind of right-wing branded, where I've heard young women say, like, you know, I'm not one of those podcast guys, but I'm not fat. And it's almost apologetic. So that is a weird thing. And, like, the New York Times ran a piece on this recently where they said, you know, like, you keep going to the gym and you'll probably become right wing. They actually meant center right, not like rock ribbed Republican, but like that correlates with decreased tolerance for crime because now you can fight. It correlates with less respect for immigration because you might get a blue collar job as versus service. Like, it was actually an interesting article, but I mean, some of that probably is reality. I would actually add just one tip for people. Like, the way to lose weight, like, carbs are probably the worst thing to eat, but the way to lose weight is just to burn more calories than you take in.
Yeah.
Like, this is something people are really, really, really complicating, especially on the female side. Like, if you have a food scale and you know how much you're eating and you know it's 300 calories burnt every mile you run or whatever, like, it's very difficult. Like, I've been steadily losing weight for a couple weeks now. You can do that every week for the rest of your life. It's not a very complex process. So I don't know how much of the fad diets really do is versus just like run or box more than you eat.
I think it's like this notion of like, well, if you're keto, you're probably a MAGA bro, but that's stupid because like I said earlier, I mean, if you go to Hollywood in L.A., well, I was just out in L.A. I mean, it's not MAGA land, but everything out there is freaking low carb. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just a thing. I mean, when I think of lettuce wraps, I literally think of California because I think it's where it started. Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm wrong on that point, but does everything have to be political? Like even our freaking diet, like give me a break. You know what I mean? And you could also make the argument too, that there's a lot of very heavy set Trump supporters who clearly don't eat, follow the keto diet. You know what I mean? Like it's like an unnecessary, stupid article. I don't know. I have nothing more to say about it than that. Yeah, it's just stupid.
I feel you. Like you're obviously 90%+ correct. I think that in social science, this is what we call a multivariate model, where you look at all the things that predict something. Like, so the thing is being in shape. And like, if you throw in Democrat or Republican, like if Republican probably does have an effect. Like there are a lot of like little runner guys that are Democrats, but most soldiers, cops, firefighters, football coaches, yeah, muscle builders probably do lean right. So there's like a little effect there. But I mean, you'd also see other stuff like what state you live in. Do you live in a state like Colorado where you have to jog up a mountain to go to work? I mean, California, where they intentionally tell you can't drive certain days and everyone's a hippie. Yeah. I mean, like that's going to play a role. The big thing with being fit is probably just social class. Like, so body positivity is like a middle class female thing. Like everyone else, whether it's working class union guys, upper middle class people, they're much more likely to be in shape, I think. There's probably another bulge, then no pun intended, down in like the actual lower class, down in the quote unquote hood.
You know, I'm doing the TV diet, which is starvation, because I've noticed, you know, when you do the TV, the camera's unforgiving. So I'm just doing what I really do is I do timed eating. I watch the, you know, Andrew Huberman. Do you ever watch his stuff? Dr. Huberman?
Sometimes, yeah.
He had this whole thing about time-restricted eating. You got to do like a window. And so I try to do the window thing. And then I forget to eat, and I can't eat too close to the show because then I'll just be digesting the whole time. So I have not eaten yet today. And so I'm looking forward to the show ending so I can finally friggin' eat. But I want a burger because I'm in New York. But the thing about it is that I'm really over the whole brioche bun thing. Do they have those in Kentucky? Is that because I think we've overdone it as a society with brioche buns.
Yeah, I think that's a thing that hit nationally in every big city. Like, I live in the capital, Louisville and Cincy, or, you know, pro cities. I mean, so I think that hit nationally maybe 3 years ago, like the special type of bread, like whoever Al's potato rolls or whoever's potato rolls they are, where it's very hard to get a hamburger that's just on a hamburger bun from the store. Yeah, I mean, I do think that's an example of... I was talking about this with a friend of mine. He was like, well, you know, if you got a chef in a restaurant, for everything but the fancy pastas, there's kind of the question of why do you need a chef? So people try to spice it up. So, like, you'll get a burger and they ask you if you want any pecans ground on top of it. And it was like comedy routine level funny because it's all stuff you've seen. Like, yeah, this mac and cheese, it's got lobster in it. Is it possible to get it without the lobster? No. You know, like, you're going to pay my salary. You know, so I think that's something we all notice.
Can I get the lobster mac and cheese? Hold the lobster. I love it. Dr. Wilfred Riley, lies my liberal teacher told me. Always fun, my man. I really appreciate your time today. So let's talk soon.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Talk to you soon. Bye.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour on the Rick Cioli Show. Brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. A premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
What is that now? Looking on the TV. I guess there's some. I should have asked him about that statue of that woman in Times Square that everyone's talking about. Well, we'll do it next time. There's always something to talk about with a good doctor. All right. Let me mention to you as well that we have a wonderful show coming up at the Grand Hotel at Cape May. We're gonna get Dr. Riley there for one of them. Matt, did he confirm a date yet with us?
Yeah, he's going to be at the one in August.
Oh, he will. August 15th.
Yep.
Awesome. Yeah. That's huge. That's great. That's going to be really, really, really awesome. We'll look forward to that. So let's see. The Grand Hotel of Cape May is obviously my happy place, and I love it there. And if you stay in June, midweek stays, you're going to get resort credits. Now, here's the best part about these resort credits. Use the resort credits right on site. Hemingway's Restaurant, great food, great drinks, the pool bar, outdoor beach concession stand, obviously it's on the beach, gift shop, take the family on a whale watching boat cruise. The longer you stay, the more you get back in resort credits. So you stay 3 nights, you get a certain amount, 5 nights, 7 days, you get $80 back in resort credits a day. So that really helps pay for the vacation. Plus, what I love about the Grand Hotel versus just renting a shore house, you're going to get the amenities of a resort. You're going to have two pools, a gigantic outdoor heated pool and a gigantic indoor heated saltwater pool. So if it rains, the weather's not great, whatever, go in the indoor pool. So you always have something to do with the kids. You have housekeeping, and you also have refrigerators and kitchenettes in many of the rooms as well. So you can even bring in your own groceries. It really makes sense, and it's right by the beach. The beach is right there. It's the oceanfront Grand Hotel at Cape May. If you're thinking about an event, we got wedding season coming up and family reunions, baby showers, bridal showers, whatever it is. We talked to my friend Caitlin. She will book an amazing time for you. Lifetime memories at the Grand Hotel of Cape May. And mark your calendar. June 20th, our first live show of the year. And we'll be there. It's going to be a blast, all right? GrandHotelCapeMay.com, my happy place. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Want to grow your business fast? With TikTok ads, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your websites, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals. But you're scrolling your phone, and maybe you're in bed. Because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you'd get at the store. Like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt, or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Great to be with you today. Appreciate it very, very much. We got a lot going on, and I am happy that we are almost to summer. I really am happy we're almost to Memorial Day. But what I'm worried about is electricity rates, obviously. And this is the big story of the hour, brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. You know, we're going to have an election in New Jersey for governor. The primary is almost over, thank God. It's the first Tuesday after the first Monday in June. And then we're going to have a candidate, a Republican candidate, and then everybody can unite behind that candidate, and then we can go on and defeat the Democrats. I have a guess on who it's going to be. Democrats, I'm pretty sure they're going to nominate a woman named Mikey Sherrill. Mikey Sherrill is pretending to be a moderate. Since she became a congresswoman, she's made something like $7 million, something like that. I mean, just crazy amounts of cash. It's amazing how these people do this. But she's going to run as a helicopter pilot. She's going to run as some sort of a moderate. She did not vote for the Laken Riley Act. But she's probably going to wind up winning the Democrat nomination. I think the Republicans, what they should do is they should absolutely make electricity rates a big issue in this race. And this isn't just for Jersey. I mean, this is everywhere. Because of the policies of the left, because of the Green Deal policies, they have ruined the marketplace when it comes to electricity rates. That's the bottom line. And whether it's California, whether it's Jersey, whether it's anywhere that they embrace Green New Deal scams, then we see the rates soar. And that's what you're going to see in New Jersey this summer. But now it looks like they've got more that's going to be happening, which is going to cause even higher rate hikes. So my friend Dawn Fantasia She's an Assemblywoman. She's really great. She put out a clip, and I saw it was on Save Jersey as well, our buddy Matt Rooney's site. Don't forget Rooney. You can listen to his show every Saturday nights now. And then this is cue up cut number six, Sean. This is a New Jersey. This is a Republican who brought this to everybody's attention. His name is Paul Kenitra. He represents the Jersey Shore, and he's fighting for New Jersey. And when our buddy Wake Up New Jersey also put this out earlier today, so it's a bill called A844, which reduces the usage of equipment that uses fossil fuels and natural gas. All right. For example, like they hate leaf blowers. I hate the sound of leaf blowers, but whatever. I mean, the Democrats hate them not because they're loud. They hate them because they use gas. So they want to get rid of anything that's gas powered. They want to make everything electric. Your lawnmower, leaf blower, your car, everything. This, but remember now, New Jersey, because of the stupid energy master plan from his royal rugness, King Philip the Uncountable, they have to now buy energy from out of state, bring it into the market, which is incredibly expensive, which is why rates are about to go and skyrocket this summer. You're talking increases of anywhere from 18% to 25%. It's going to be really bad, particularly for businesses. And then they'll pass on those costs to you. So here's this assemblyman, this Republican, explaining what the Democrats are trying to do here. Take a listen.
This bill is exactly what got us to this energy crisis in the first place. I cannot believe that we are even talking about moving this through committee. I mean, we're here and the state is facing these massive increases in utility costs because we demonized natural gas, because we spent billions of dollars on offshore wind turbines that are never, ever going to get built. And the solution here, the bill that got put in front of us, is let's solve ratepayer issues by putting more demand on the system. It's incomprehensible to me that that's the solution. But you know what? I'm not the subject matter expert, and he's sitting over there right now. I'm just making sure that there's nobody that's got a gun on him or anything like that, because in his testimony, he says, the overarching concern, as mentioned in our earlier letter of June 19, 2024 to the Senate Environment and Energy Committee on a similar version of this bill, is this proposed legislation will increase utility bills for ratepayers who are already struggling with multiple utility rate increases. We urge you to not pass this bill out of committee without amendments. I mean, what's clearer than that? And I have to say, and I like so many of you on a personal level on this committee. I've been on this.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's really amazing that we still have Democrats doubling down on green nonsense, but it really isn't if you think about it. And I'll tell you the reason why. Okay, here's the reason why. They don't know what direction they want to be in. They have no idea where they want to go, what they want to be when they grow up. So to give you that point, you know, everybody talks about Gavin Newsom, and he's doing this reinvention of himself. Gavin Newsom is right now pretending to be somebody else. Let's cue up cut 31 here. Governor of California, obviously, wants to run for president, had Charlie Kirk on his podcast, had Steve Bannon on his podcast, trying to be this reasonable guy. Gavin Newsom was one of those guys who also pushed electric vehicle mandates, the end of fossil fuels. He's a far left wing progressive now parading as a moderate, and you can't let him get away with this stuff. But here he is pretending on like, actually, no, it's not 31. I'm sorry. What's the other one, Matt, of Newsom I sent you earlier today? What is it?
17. It's 17. Cut 17.
Yeah, cut 17. This is him lamenting the problems that the Democrat Party has. Take a listen.
We got crushed, and we need to understand why. Was it because of the incumbency penalty? Was it because of inflation? Was it because of interest rates? Was it because of immigration? Was it because we were too, quote unquote, woke? Was it because of issues with Israel? Was it all of the above?
Was it all the above? Look, here's the deal. What do you guys expect people to vote for? Your policies are catching up to you now. That's the problem, is that the policies are catching up to you. Think about it. Legal immigration, the border, catching up to them. The electricity rates, catching up to them. Crime in America, catching up to them. Everything that they've stood for and advocated has now caught up to them. Yeah, wokeism and making everybody feel like they can't say, they can't joke, they can't have conversations with people. It's caught up to you. It's now a parody. I have not seen the show yet, The Studio. But one of our Zioli Army members was telling me about it on Twitter the other day and saying that it's actually pretty funny because there's a whole scene where they have to, they're mocking now. I mean, it's an Apple TV show openly mocking wokeism in Hollywood as they try to film a show. So it's become a joke. It's become the centerpiece of that. So all of their policies, everything that they stood for, has now backfired on them. And the question then becomes, you've seen The Studio, Matt? You know the scene I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's really good. The scene you're talking about is Seth Rogen, who plays the head of a studio, is trying to make casting decisions for a Kool-Aid movie. But he's afraid everything is going to be offensive.
So tell me about it. So what happens? What's the plot?
Basically, that's it. So they want a film that's going to be similar to Barbie, where it's a box office smash and gets critical acclaim. So they're taking themselves very seriously with the production of this Kool-Aid film. They've secured the rights. They're really excited about it. But then they start to think some of their casting decisions may be misconstrued as racist. So they basically go through the list that they have, and they have to start firing people, hiring new people, and every time they make a decision, it's still offensive.
That's amazing. I think we definitely ought to watch that. We got to do that. I mean, I got to tune in for that, right?
I love it. Seth Rogen, he's politically sort of annoying, but this is a great show.
All right. Yeah, politically he's kind of annoying, that's true, but you know what? It's good for all of us to have shows that mock like the political correctness of it. By the way, you know, I was Mobland, as Susie Cool missed me talking about the other day. Mobland is freaking awesome. You have to see Mobland if you haven't seen it yet. It's great. It's so good. Have you watched it yet?
I have not watched it, no.
Why not?
It's on my list. I am going to look at it. I had to catch up for on The Last of Us, which I'm also enjoying.
Oh, come on. You know,
you watched The Last of Us? It's great.
The Last of Us bores me. I don't know. I mean, how many more freaking, you know, pandemic, end-of-the-world freaking shows do we need? Am I right?
Well, I disagree. I think it's entertaining. But just get to episode 2 of season 2. Trust me, you'll be back in.
I'm just saying, you know, I'm just saying. I personally, in my opinion, just think that we have enough with freaking, you know, viruses, The Walking Dead. Like, enough. It's enough, you know, that's how I'm thinking. So
sure HBO is going to be devastated to hear your review.
Yeah, well, you know, you see Disney's losing money again. Do you see that?
What are they losing money on now? They've got that big Lilo and Stitch film coming out. I thought that was supposed to be a hit.
Oh, is that what they want? Oh, I guess that's going to be the thing. Lilo and Stitch. That's going to save everybody?
I don't know. That's what they're saying. It's a live-action film, which they haven't had a whole lot of success with recently, but also this one doesn't have Rachel Zegler destroying the marketing campaign, so I think they're remaining optimistic.
Look at that. Very good. All right. We got to go to break. Do you got to do break or what?
We do have to break, yes.
All right, let me take a break. We'll come back. We got a lot more to cover as the show goes on today. Am I all caught up? Am I my live reads?
I think you're actually good. Technically you're done.
I'm
done. No, you have one. You have one that we can knock out in the next hour.
All right. Well, I'll just do it now. How about that?
All right. Garden State Earthworks.
We'll do it live. We'll do it live. Garden State Earthworks. My buddy Lou. Lou Vargo. Great guy. Great friend of the show. He's going to help you out when it comes to water in your property and all the problems that water has. Because water causes a lot of problems. And whether it's water getting into your basement, foundation, whether it's water that's accumulating in your backyard where mosquitoes breed or anything like that, what you want to do is you want to make sure that you reach out to Garden State Earthworks. GardenStateEarthworks.com. My buddy Lou Vargo, great guy. 856-848-4444. 856-848-4444. They're busy. They're always busy this time of year. But if you reach out to him, he's going to make you a priority if you tell him I sent you. So do that today. What are you waiting for? GardenStateEarthworks.com. He saved me twice. I mean, with our first house, wet basement. He came to the house. He said, you'll never have another drop of water in this basement again. The other house, the new house, backyard was like a freaking swamp. So he took care of it for us, drained the water away. We are good to go. So that's what I want you to do. I want you to be able to experience the joy of not having water problems on your property anymore. That's what Garden State Earthworks will do for you. And these spring rains that are here, water problems never get better on their own. They're only going to keep costing you more and more money. Patches don't work, sealants. No. You got to drain the water away. That's what Garden State Earthworks does. GardenStateEarthworks.com, 856-848-4444.